What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.
This is the Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
Hello, I'm Jason Kelly.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
And welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports. This, of course, is the podcast where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports, talk to some of the biggest players in the industry, and we are beyond thrilled. Today, we're going to be speaking with PGA Champions Tour golfer Billy Andrade, and we got to do some disclaimers right up top here, Lynchy, because we've both known this guy for longer than any of us in this interview cares to admit. I'll go first. I met Billy in the early 90s when he and his wife Jody, before they had kids, he was just coming onto the tour, moved in next door to my family and next door to my parents in Atlanta on Club Drive. And I've known him and his whole family ever since. His son, Cameron, was actually the ring bearer in our wedding. He made it halfway up the aisle before he got scared of, I think the quote was, Jen's big white dress, and turned around and turned tail. So I'm just delighted to spend some time with him. He is one of the funniest, most thoughtful people that I know. And Lynchy, I've never played golf with him, which is good for him, but yeah. You have.
Yeah, and despite playing with me, he went out and won back-to-back titles in 91. He won the Kemper and the Buick after a horrible day with me in my game. But, you know, Billy was I met Billy at Pleasant Valley Country Club, which was a host of a PGA stop every year right up the road from Route 146. It takes you from Rhode Island right up there. And Billy was one of the top, along with Brad Faxon, the two most recognizable golfers in New England. And two of the nicest guys, two of the most affable guys, two of the most approachable guys. So I get paired with Billy in the Pro-Am. And I have a sports photographer named Dick Dunham, who's a good guy, but you know, is not afraid or intimidated by everyone. And he goes up to Billy and he says, "Hey, Billy, would you mind wearing a wireless microphone for like six holes today, just so I can hear what you know the stuff you say to the caddy?" And I'm putting my hand over my face. I'm going, "Oh no, you know, at the Pro-Am, you know, he needs to be sociable, but this is how he makes his living, Dickie. He just, you know, he needs to work on his game, you know, and he'll say nice things to us every now and then." He said, "Sure, I'd be happy to do it." So I think Billy's dad was the third member of our foursome. The fourth guy was this really nice guy, about a 12 handicap, and he was a little shy, a little intimidated, and he came over and shook hands with all of us, and he had a posse of about 15 friends with him, all looked like weekend golf guys. And you know, I said, "Something going on here." So one of the guys pulled me over and he said, "Hey, this is our buddy here. I couldn't remember his name, so let's just call him John." He says, He's terminally ill with cancer. He has 6 months to live. His dream was to play in a PGA event with a PGA player, but I don't want to bother Billy Andrade for it." And I said, "I'll take care of it." I go over to Billy and I explain the situation to him. And from that moment on, Billy was attached at the hip to this guy, John, for 18 holes. We recorded that Billy was just helping him with his game, talking, turn the conversation around, asking him what he did for a living, you know, "Introduce me to your friends, let's take some pictures, et cetera, et cetera." And the guy had the happiest day of his life. I got a letter about 5 or 6 months later. He had passed away. We sent him the tape and said it was the greatest day of his life, and it was because of you, Billy Andrade. You made that day for that guy.
Yeah, I remember that so well. What I remember the most is he played an amazing round of golf, and he hadn't played for a long time because he was sick. And then he comes out, you know, in front of the huge crowds at Pleasant Valley, and I mean, he literally played one. He said it was one of the best rounds of golf he's ever played in his life, and it was really, really special. It was special to be out there and understanding the situation. You know, made it even more special for all of us. I mean, we all had tears in our eyes at the end of it when all his friends came out in the last hole and everybody's hugging everybody. It was really cool. And I can't thank you guys enough for having me on the show and looking forward to chatting with you.
Well, it's great to have you. So Billy, let's get to the present and then we're going to go back in time a little bit. We'll do a little bit more of This Is Your Life, but How are things right now? You're in Atlanta, you know, quarantined with, I think, three of the four Androids are there. How's it going being sort of off for a bit, looking forward, obviously, to getting back in July?
Yeah, it's been really weird, I would say, first of all. And at first it was, oh my gosh, like, is this ever going to end? Groundhog Day every day. And then it was kind of cool to have, you know, to be home and spending more time with your family. And my daughter, you know, she was graduating from school, so she had some school work to do to finish. She graduated at TCU, and she was bummed out that she couldn't walk and all that and stuff. And so it's been kind of like mixed emotions, you know, like at first it was kind of weird, and then it got kind of great. And now there's you see the light at the end of the tunnel when you had the Charles Schwab challenge on TV this past weekend to see that golf is now back. And we have a date, 1st of August, we're going to get back in playing again. So it's just been, we've been quarantined. We've really have taken this seriously in our family. We haven't done a whole lot. We've not been out to dinner. I did not play golf for 2 straight months. And then I wow. started playing about 3 weeks ago, and it's been interesting the way the golf clubs have, you know, everyone takes their own cart, nobody touches your clubs, nobody touches anything, everyone's wearing masks. So the clubs here, my clubs that I'm a member at here in Atlanta, have been very good with keeping everything you know, clean and disinfected and all that stuff. So it's been good. And but it's, you have that you don't have that, like, not the desire. I've always had the desire, but the, now that there's, you know, a date that we're going to play, now I can start, you know, ramping up my practicing and getting ready mentally for coming back in August.
Billy, no fans, obviously, for the first four PGA events. Are you going to have fans up in Michigan? Is it July 23rd, you said, or August 1st you're going back?
Yeah, it's like it's the end of July, 1st August, Lynchy. And, you know, right now we're just watching what the tour does and seeing how it's going there. And then I think in mid-July the tour goes to the Memorial, Nicklaus's event, and they're going to have a handful of fans. They're not opening it way up to the public. I think it's going to be X amount of fans on the course. And then our tournament at the end of July, 1st August, I know the Ally would love to have fans. I know that that was one of the words I heard from our president of our Champions Tour, that they want fans. So hopefully we can, it's going to be okay. Don't know. Wish we had the crystal ball to say that everything's going to be perfect. But, you know, safety is the number one issue here. And, you know, there's a lot of players, especially our international players.
Right.
They have to come over and quarantine for 14 days, and then they really can't go back home. So it's going to be interesting to see if this all works out, and hopefully it does. But obviously, really, without a vaccine, you know, what are we really doing here? Is this the smart thing? I hope it is, and I hope nobody gets sick. But we're really kind of playing Russian roulette, aren't we?
Yeah.
With all these sports, and you know, I understand the economics. I understand, you know, especially with college football. I mean, geez, if these colleges can't play football, there's going to be so many sports that are going to go by the wayside at these schools because they can't afford it because of the football money. So it's going to be interesting to see, and hopefully, you know, this virus doesn't come back in the fall.
Well, and it's funny, Billy, and this is a name very familiar to you because I know he's an old friend of yours as well. You know, I spoke with George Pine a couple weeks ago, and he gave me a stat which blew me away, which may not be as much of a surprise to you, or it may be. He said Tuscaloosa, Alabama, home of University of Alabama, of course, their economic the economic impact of a single University of Alabama game is $20 million. So that's $20 million, you know, times five or six, depending. You know, you live in the South, you know, as well as I do. I mean, these are like mini economies that are built around college sports. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. And it's, you know, I saw a stat the other day that it was LSU's sports programs. And this was not this past year where they won the national championship at football. This was a couple years ago. The football program made $56 million. The baseball program made $8 or $6 million. And that's very impressive because baseball usually doesn't make any money at most schools. And then every other sport at LSU lost money. So you got the football program, basically all these programs in college football pay for everything else. So these athletic directors are going a little crazy, and presidents, you know, pulling the trigger. You know, the Pac-12 conference came out first and said, we're not playing. And then, you know, what does that do? Alabama is supposed to play, I think, a game in Dallas against the Pac-12 team at the beginning of the year. So is that game, you know, canceled? It's going to be interesting to see. I know that all these schools want to get back, and all these high schools, especially here in Georgia, reading about high schools are starting to practice again. And whether or not it's safe, who knows? I don't think so.
Billy, you know, the tour has arranged for a charter to take the caddies, the players, and officials. They're going today from Fort Worth to South Carolina. I don't assume you guys have a charter. Will more guys be afraid to fly commercial and actually drive from event to event like you used to do when you were breaking in, you know, when you were in your early 20s?
Yeah, that's a great question, Lynchy. I saw that the tour is you know, kind of doing like this bubble. They're trying to keep everybody in this bubble, so everyone's staying at the same hotels. Everyone's chartering from tournament to tournament. You know, all the testing that they're doing to try to keep everybody safe is great. But yeah, I'm very concerned about getting on a commercial airline right now. I've talked to a few people that have done it, and they say it's pretty crazy because there's nobody on these planes. You have to wear a mask. I just played golf yesterday with a friend that went to Portland, Oregon on business. And he said that, nobody in the Atlanta airport was wearing masks until he got on the plane. He flew. He got to Portland. Everyone took their masks off the minute they got off the plane. He said it was not as sanitary or not as efficient as he thought it was going to be. But, yeah, I know some guys I read with Bubba Watson bought an RV, and he's bussing it from tournament to tournament. I would think some players will drive, but yeah, it's you know, everyone wants to get back to normal. Well, normal's gone. Now we got new normal, and what's the new normal going to be? Is it going to be driving? Is it going to be not taking as many plane rides as you can, or not caring? It's going to be different for sure.
And so, Billy, I guess in the pre-COVID, you know, previously normal world, you know, over the past couple of years, you know, you made a big transition to the Champions Tour. Lynch and I both having watched you during your PGA years and now watching you in the Champions Tour, I'm going to go out on a limb. Actually, I'll quote my brother, Wynn, who you know very well, who I mentioned this to you, said, I'm pretty sure Billy Andrade is living his best life right now. It seems like you're having a pretty good time on the Champions Tour.
Yeah, you know, I at the end of my PGA Tour life, I did some TV for a couple years, and I think that was the best thing, looking back, of my success on the Champions Tour, because it kind of gave me a new perspective. I got a little break mentally. It kind of rejuvenated my passion for the game. You know, you get beat down. Golf is so hard, and especially when you get into your late 40s, and you're not playing as well as you know you can. You miss cuts, you come home, your kids say, you know, did you miss the cut again? You know, instead of, so you're not in a good place. And it was time for me to take a little break. And the TV world really helped me watch, you know, especially I was walking with the top players. And the one thing I noticed is that they don't make every putt. You know, like you always think that the best players are making everything and, you know, they hitting it perfect. And, you know, you need to be more perfect. And I realized that, you know what, they don't make every putt and they're not perfect. And, you know, why am I, you know, beating myself up so badly? And then, you know, transitioning to the Champions Tour, my number one goal was I'm going to enjoy this. I'm not going to care. I've already put all this, you know, 20-plus years, 25 years of grinding. And, you know, I guess that I didn't realize how much of the pressure cooker the tour was. And until I got away from it, and then looking back, like, you know, every year you have to finish in the top 125, you know, the pressure, and then you don't have kids, and then you have kids, and you get married, then you have kids, and then you accumulate, you know, all the expenses that you have to pay, and the pressure can be enormous. And, you know, I just kind of went through it and got lucky, and, you know, I said when I'm going to this Champions Tour, I'm just going to have fun. If I play great, great. And if I don't, it's no big deal. You know, I'm not going to care. And with that attitude, it's been, I played some of my best golf. And I think it's from that mindset of not really caring and not putting so much pressure on myself. And it's really paid off. And it's, I'll tell you, I just pinch myself, you know, because we're the only sport that can really do this at our age. You know, we're on television, you know, so, you know, the whole golfing world is watching, so you don't want to, you don't want to embarrass yourself in front of, you know, a national audience. But I got to thank Bob Golby, Don January, Arnold Palmer, the guys that started this Champions Tour, you know, which was called the Senior Tour back in the late 70s, 1980. And, you know, to be able to say in 2020 that I'm on this tour, it's my seventh year. I can't believe it's been 7 years already and how much fun we have. It's really cool. And the camaraderie is great. And the play is incredible. And I've seen how much better the play has gotten in my seventh year now. The scores these guys are shooting is just amazing. So the quality, the level of the game and the fun of it is just it's just awesome.
Billy, I was kind of surprised that by round four yesterday, guys were actually giving fist pumps and forearm pumps to each other. When they first started on Thursday, it was sort of just a head nod and, you know, an air high five. But there was a lot of fist. There was a lot of by the time this thing ended, the 18th hole and then the playoff, there was a lot of, you know, contact going on there, and I was kind of surprised at that. Even though I think you know, Jay Monahan, they got it right and did a great job with the whole thing. I think the guys sort of relaxed a little bit, and I worried what kind of message it was sending to everybody that was watching.
Yeah, it was the same message that, you know, like when you started playing golf, they said you can't, no rakes, you can't touch the pin and all this stuff. And then Tiger Woods has his exhibition with Brady, and every hole Tiger's taking the pin out. So then I was thinking, like how many people around the world now are going to start taking the pin out because Tiger took the pin out? And then you see yesterday the same thing. I think it's, you're so programmed, Lynchy, that, you know, you get done and you usually shake hands, you take your hat off, you know, and now it's just weird. I think that in the heat of the battle, I think some of these guys just forget, like, oh my God, I can't do that. You know, you saw Mickelson, you know, give the fist pump, which was not a fist pump. When he was playing with Brady, he was the only one that was doing it. The other three were all touching each other. So, yeah, it's hopefully none of this is going to be a problem. But, yeah, I noticed that as well.
just to follow up on that about the touching at our place, you know, I was looking for a pencil the other day and a ball marker. Well, those are gone now. You can't, you know, you used to go into the pro shop or outside of the first tee and you just, you know, scoop up three tees and grab a ball marker and a pencil. I asked like the assistant, I said, where are the pencils? He said, we can't give them to you, Mike. Do you have one in your bag? I said, no, I don't. But, you know, so someone had one in his bag because they didn't want, he actually came out with a napkin and had a pencil for me and gave it to me. But, I mean, that's how, you know, how careful everybody is being about this thing. And it's bizarre. But you're right. The old habits are hard to break, not grabbing the pin and, you know, not going over and fist bumping someone.
Well, you should see, Lynch, you guys are in a hotbed up there with the coronavirus. Right. You know, you go to some places. I was talking to Mike Weir the other day, Masters champion, lives in Utah. He says his life hasn't changed one bit. The virus isn't really out here, and nobody's social distancing, none of that. And my buddy Andy Berg, who's my financial advisor, he's got a lake house at Reynolds Plantation, and this was a month ago. He said, "Oh, it's, you know, this past weekend it was like 4th of July. Everybody was out on their boats, partying, having a good time." And so, in different places of the country, it's really different. You know, like you guys are in total lockdown. Massachusetts, yep. New York, Rhode Island, and then you go south, you know, when we got this wonderful governor here in Georgia that just, you know, opened everything up pretty early and took a gamble with it. And, you know, it's just, it is crazy, though. You know, you go, hey, where's my pencil? I need a pencil.
So with an eraser.
You probably played the best round of your life.
Yeah, I had a four of that play.
Yeah.
I'm just keeping track of my head here. Just keeping track of my head.
Or at our age, Lynchy, you're like, you forget. What did I think I'm I can't remember.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
You know, Billy, you were talking about the camaraderie on the tour, and Lynchy mentioned this at the top of the conversation. I mean, it feels like one of the most special relationships and friendships you've had going back many, many years is with Brad Faxon. I mean, whether it is playing on the tour, whether it's the charity stuff you've done together, whether it's even being in movies together, if I'm remembering Kingpin correctly, the beginning of Kingpin correctly. Tell us about that relationship, because it feels like a special one.
Yeah, he, you know, he's 3 years older, so he was always the guy I looked up to when I was, you know, we were playing junior golf, and, you know, he was winning everything, and, you know, then he went off to Furman University, to college, then I, 3 years later, go to Wake Forest, and, you know, then we started traveling together, playing amateur golf, driving from tournament to tournament like we did, and so he was always like my big brother. Always kind of took care of me. And then when I got on the PGA Tour my rookie year, he made sure I had great practice rounds with great players and kind of took me under his wing. So he was always, you know, he was always there. He's such a caring person, like Lynchy was saying earlier, a giving guy. He's just one of those guys that, you know, I try to emulate when I was get going up the ranks. And then I realized, like, quickly after I got on the tour for a little while, and like, I just thought that everybody putted like Brad Faxon, like, because I grew up playing with him, and you just had a chip and putt. I mean, that was it. And then you get on the tour and you realize, oh my gosh, this guy's like one of the greatest putters ever. And no, not everybody putts as good as this guy. And so he's been a special friend. He's a great person, and he's kind of going into that not playing much golf anymore and getting into the TV world. And he's done a great job with Fox. He's kind of grown as an announcer, and he does a really good job there. So we've been friends a long time, and you know, one of those guys that I always looked up to.
You know, Billy and Brad, Jason, have been running this tournament, the CVS Charity Classic, and also your Champions for Children, I think, is the other one. Is that what it is, Billy? Is that the name of it?
Yeah.
And
yep.
So obviously those two have been casualties of this pandemic in this calendar year. Is that right?
Yeah, they have. You know, we've we're still going to do stuff with our sponsors and try to give as much money away this year as we can to charity, because it's all the charities are really suffering with through this pandemic. So and then we're going to come back next year with our 22nd CVS Health Charity Classic, which you know, it's been dear to my heart and Brad's hearts, you know, our hearts, with how much money that we and how many people and how much money we've raised for charity. We've raised over $23 million in 21 years. So it's a big event in Rhode Island. It's
it's huge.
It's a really great thing that and we couldn't do it without CVS. They've been a great sponsor with us, and it's something that you know, when we started it, we were just hoping that other golfers that we invited would come, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, fast forward, you know, 21 years later, can't believe that we're still doing it, and it's still going strong. So it's been great. And then Brad and I started a foundation together in the early 90s, and we used to have a celebrity pro-am at Wanamoyset, and we quit doing it right around 2000 because of the CBS started going. So but we still have given a bunch of money away to a lot of needy children in Rhode Island and southeastern Massachusetts. So it's been great. It's been a passion that we've both have enjoyed doing and still do.
One of the best parts about it, it's not a scheduled tour event, so it's a little bit looser, and there's a lot of laughing going on. There's a lot of interaction with the fans, and I think that's why a lot of the people come out there, because you and Brad are very approachable, and you don't intimidate people, and you interact with people, and they don't forget that. And the good, you know, the smallest state in Rhode Island has two of the guys with the biggest, two of the biggest hearts in the game, with you and Brad. And I think it's been a great undertaking, and we love going down and watching it and covering it every year.
Yeah, well, thanks, Lynch. I appreciate it. The other thing is that if we weren't approachable, then we would hear it from all the fans of New England, because, you know, it's just so funny. You know, people from the South come up to Rhode Island, and, you know, my buddy was telling a story yesterday playing golf about coming to Rhode Island for the first time, and we walked in Dunkin' Donuts in Bristol, Rhode Island, and, you know, seven people were giving me crap because I missed a short putt the week before. You know, I almost broke the TV set because you missed that putt on 17. You know, I can't believe it. You know, I go, you almost broke your TV. How do you think I felt? Oh, that's great. People in Rhode Island and Massachusetts and New England, they feel like they own you a little bit. If they own you, then they're gonna tell it like it is, and that's kind of the way I grew up. So I love it. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a different sort of vibe than maybe at Capital City Country Club, right, Billy?
Very much so.
Mike Ruzioni always says, he runs into people and says, "Boy, I tell you, I can't believe it's been 40 years since we beat the Russians." And Mike said, "I didn't know you were on the team."
Yeah.
So, Billy, I know another thing that you've been involved in is the East Lake Invitational, if I've got that right. And I do wonder, I was thinking about that, especially in the context of, candidly, everything that's been going on in Atlanta over the past couple weeks, knowing yours and Jody's commitment to social justice and to the community in and around Atlanta. Tell us a little bit about that. And candidly, I'm really interested in what you're seeing there in Atlanta right now as a hotbed of the civil rights movement. Obviously, everything going on over the past few weeks. Just would love to get your insights there.
Yeah. Tom Cousins, a developer here in Atlanta, bought East Lake and revitalized the golf. Did a total redesign of the It's a makeover. The golf course hadn't been. It hosted the 1960, I think, three Ryder Cup. Arnold Palmer was the playing captain of that team. Let's go back to the 20s, 30s. This is where Bobby Jones grew up. He grew up behind the 13th hole. This golf course was one of the greatest courses in the world. People knew it, knew of it, and by the late 80s, this place was just in dire straits. In and around the area, it was called East Lake Meadows. In 1971, Bobby Jones passed away, and within a month, they turned that whole area into public housing, an experiment that the government tried. And by 1994, the place was called Little Vietnam. The statistics were just so bad. A murder a week, average age of a grandmother was like 33 years old. They had 580 units, and they had 10 fathers that were living there. You turned 15 years old, you had to get pregnant to get food stamps. It was just it was the place to get drugs. It was just an awful, and it was right next to East Lake Golf Club. So Tom Cousins bought the golf course, has revitalized the whole neighborhood. They have a, they put in a YMCA. It's amazing. It's a story that's been told a few times. There's a great documentary about East Lake that you can look up. That's just it's just amazing to watch. But I went out there to play golf. I was invited by Mr. Cousins in 1994. And then he gave me an honorary membership to be the golf pro out of East Lake on the tour, and just you know, do a clinic a year for the kids in the area that you know, they revitalized across the street a nine holes with the first tee they have over there now, so you can do a clinic for the kids. And I said sure, so I did one like in 95 or 6, and then didn't do one for 15 years. No one ever called me or anything. And then I started thinking, you know, this is my adult home, and I really haven't done anything here. You know, Brad Faxon and I have done some great work up in Rhode Island. I know I'm not from the South, but I feel this is my home now. I got to do something, but I can't carry myself. I can't carry a charity, get involved with a charity and do it on my own here in Georgia, because I'm not from here. This is where I live now. But I need to, if I can get involved, you know what? I'm going to get involved with East Lake. So I called Mr. Cousins and said, I have an idea. Let's do a celebrity pro-am. Let's make it the East Lake Invitational. I'll invite a bunch of my celebrity friends down, and we'll, and we can raise a bunch of money for the foundation. What do you say? And he let me do it. We've been doing it now for 10 years. I got Stuart Sink involved because he's also a member of the club. So he and I kind of host it. It's been absolutely wonderful. We've raised millions of dollars for the foundation, which has been great. And it's something that, you know, that I look forward to every year to host. We get some great people to come in and, showcase the golf course. We do it in the fall. Obviously, we're not going to do it this year, but we'll be back next year. As far as the civil unrest that's going on here in Atlanta, Jason, it just kills you, you know, to see what's happening. I never understood back when, where did it turn? Where did the message turn with Colin Kaepernick? And over the years, I kept saying, I don't understand. The guy was kneeling for social injustice of white officers killing black kids, And then it turned to the right, and all of a sudden it was, you're disrespecting the military, and you're disrespecting the flag. And that turn went, and then the NFL just flew with it. And here we are four or five years later here, and it's all coming back. And it just blows me away that it just keeps happening and happening. And you know, I think there, I think this pandemic has something to do with the craziness of the mental state of everyone. But it's just so sad to see all this. It really is.
Well, Billy, you've always been a leader. You've never been a follower as long as I've known you. And you know, you're down in the South and you're a Rhode Island guy, and it doesn't surprise me at all that you participate, you don't vegetate when it comes to something outside, you know, your normal world of golf.
Well, I appreciate it, Lynchy. It's, you know what, it's how you brought up. You know, I had great parents, great family. You know, my grandparents got me into golf. They were the best. And you know what, I'm lucky. I was brought up in a great home, and there's just so many kids, and there's so many folks that don't have that luxury, don't have that luckiness that I've had, that we've all had. And you know, you're the same way, and Jason, you're the same way. You're such a great family. So you know, if we can do something, and I'm also lucky that I, you know, I got into a profession where I got very good at, and I've had success. So I think it is important to you know, help others, and if you can, and you know, it's just something that's always been inside me, and I'll just do it, and, you know, for the rest of my life.
I think it's also fair to say, having watched it up close, you also made a very good choice in your partner, because I know Jody Andrade pretty well, and she does a good job of keeping you honest on all that stuff too. Fair?
Yes, she does. I think we're 33 in right now.
Is that right? Good Lord.
Yeah, 32, 33, something like that. Yeah, we're having a great time. It's yeah, she's been the rock, that's for sure. And just like you.
Billy, I gotta ask you.
We have that in common.
How did you lose your Rhode Island accent? You know, when you cross over that line from Attleboro to Pawtucket, it's Rhode Island, and I never hear it anymore from you. You've completely lost the Rhode Island accent, which is very distinctive.
You know, Lynchy, it's so funny. When I go home, people say, "I can't believe you sound like a Southerner," and then I come down here, and people are going, "Oh my gosh, get rid of that Rhode Island accent! What is wrong with you?" So I can't win.
You can't win.
I can't win. You know, it's so funny. Mark Wahlberg has changed the whole dynamic of dumbing it down or dumbing it up. And now everyone wants to talk like Dorchester.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up here. We hope you'll come back and visit with us again, Billy Andrade. And for those of you who want to catch more of Billy, follow him on Twitter. He's great to follow on Twitter. Very highly, highly entertaining. You can also, you know, if you got some time during quarantine, you can catch his cameos in Kingpin. What was the other Farrelly Brothers movie? Didn't you have another Farrelly Brothers cameo, Billy?
Yeah, I was in Stuck on You.
Stuck on You.
That was a much smaller role, but yeah.
Curb Your Enthusiasm too, right?
Yeah, I did a little. Yeah. I was a doctor there for Larry.
There you go.
One show, so yeah, all fun. Fun
stuff. And obviously catch him on the Champions Tour restarting, if all goes according to plan, late July, early August. Billy Andrade, thank you so much. Best to Jody and the kids.
All right. You guys take care. See ya.
Thanks, Billy. Good talking with you.
All right.
Okay.
And you've been listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. We're here each and every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I'm Jason Kelly. Find me on Twitter at Jason Kelly News.
And I'm Mike Lynch. You can follow me on Twitter at LynchyWCVB.
You've been listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.